Hello, and welcome to our special series of Green Elephant interviews during March 2021, supporting the annual B Corps Month. B Corporations, or B Corps for short, are businesses that meet the highest standards of verified social and environmental performance, public transparency, and legal accountability to balance profit and purpose. Throughout March, we are chatting with key people in companies which have chosen to certify as B Corps and become a force for good. Today, I've been joined by Will Richardson from Green Element. Green Element is a UK-based environmental management consultancy with over 20 years of experience in sustainability, offering a range of services to help companies improve their environmental performance whilst boosting profits. Green Element practice what they preach and prove that by being a certified B Corporation since it entered the UK 5 years ago. Will Richardson is a proud B Corp owner and a helper stroke consultant. He is the host of a podcast which is phonetically closest to ours called The Green Element. Sorry for my pronunciation on that because I keep on saying Green Elephant. A fellow of the Institute of Environmental Management and Assessment and a champion of turning things perceived as an overhead into savings or revenue, Will is a worthy addition to our B Corp month interview schedule. Welcome to the Green Elephant show, Will.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much for having me.
So let's talk about the green element in the room, your podcast. So let's start there because we are on a podcast, although we can watch it on video as well. How long have you been doing that and what got you started? Why?
I started doing it coming up to 3 years ago now. Why did we do it? What's driven me in business is to help as many organizations be as environmental as possible. And I think when we became a B Corp, it opened up my eyes to how many good things people are doing in the world in business. And I kind of knew that. And I think I suddenly started to think, actually, we need to be able to educate each other. And podcasts are a really good way to be able to do that. And we can learn the mistakes and the things that have gone well in organizations that are similar to ourselves. And we don't just limit the podcast interviews to environment, it's sustainability as a whole. So it's looking, and we don't just limit it to B Corps either.
No.
I think that there's a huge amount of really good organizations in the world that aren't B Corps and potentially never will be. But that, who cares? It doesn't matter. Actually, let's just get everyone on the same wavelength and get everyone trying to be as environmental and as sustainable as possible.
I mean, that's a great thought. I mean, there are some industries which are we would not see them as environmental or even sustainable. The oil industry, for example, and such like. Have you ever tackled any of those in talking to those? You probably haven't, but.
Funnily enough, my first ever job was an intern at BP. And wrote a paper for them. They'd come up with a new lubricant at Castrol, and they wanted to prove to the board that it was actually more environmental. And so I did a load of research and wrote a paper on how this new lubricant was actually, if it was used in all cars, then the cars would be more efficient. I think it was by about 15-20%. Therefore, they'd be using less petrol, diesel, etc. And so I think there is conversations to be had. I drive a car, I drive a diesel car. So therefore, why would I not work for a company that produces the stuff that I put into my car? I would, because that's a bit, if I could realistically say I shouldn't if I didn't drive a car, but I do. I also heat my house through gas.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but I live in a system. I may not agree with that system, but I live in it. So therefore I want, and I think that's why people get so upset with companies like, say, Shell saying what they're saying, that are such greenwashing activities. And you just think, really? Why not just be realistic with where you are. And I think that's what, and I was a huge advocate of BPs for years, until BP got rid of Lord Brown for ridiculous reasons. And I think he was heading that company in an amazing place. And then in 2010, it's almost like they just switched a corner and turned around and became one of the worst companies. And Lord Brown was taking them in such a good, Beyond Petroleum came from him.
And I mean, that's a fascinating insight into how you, you know, I think that's a great perspective, because there is not an industry in the world that couldn't become more sustainable, more environmental, just because they're not, you know, the pinnacle of, you know, zero waste and zero neutral carbon or whatever all these other phrases that people achieve. It's still possible to change these for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think why work in an echo chamber?
Yeah, it's true enough. True enough. So you when you were studying university, you started off in I've looked at your LinkedIn profile, so I dug deep into you, and I saw you switched from hospitality and tourism into environmentalism. What sparked that change, or was it actually one and the same?
Do you really want to know the answer?
Yeah, I do, because I'd like to know the inner will, please.
So, funnily enough, I at university in the hospitality management, my first degree thesis was how people perceive the effect they have on the environment whilst partaking in sports within the Cairngorm region.
Oh, okay.
So there was environmentalism in the course that I brought in. And that was back in 1998. But I must admit that I also chose the Cairngorm region because I wanted to go snowboarding. And so I thought, well, I kind of quite like the environment. I quite like snowboarding. I could go and do a load of research in a snowboard at the same time. So I went up there and did that. But I then left university and ended up doing a ski season in Whistler, living out there. I'd worked and run bars in America through my degree. And so I was fairly North American literate, I guess, and was quite keen to live in and around there. Then ended up setting up a restaurant in South America in a ski resort, and then ended up setting up a wine company, because I saw all my friends that got proper jobs back in London, and I was like, oh, what am I going to do? I don't know. I know, set up a wine company. So I wanted to import wine, found two companies that wanted to employ me to do that, but they both said they wanted me to stay in South America. And I had a girlfriend at the time that I was for the first time I was actually putting someone else before me. You know, I was 23. I just thought, actually, you're selfish for so long, aren't you? But then you actually have to think about things. And so moved back to the UK, ended up working for Just Erin and Brooks as the wine merchant to the Queen, delivering champagne to the Queen Mum, which was kind of weird, down St. James's Street. Yeah. And then got made redundant because they closed that shop down, and so decided I wanted to be a travel agent and do a master's in environmental management at the same time. And I got told by quite a few people, don't ever be a travel agent, it's the most stressful job in the world. And I didn't really understand what they were talking about, and of course these old people, they didn't have a clue. You know, I was gonna not be stressed at all, man. I've got so much respect for travel agents, because they don't get paid very much. And when a honeymoon goes wrong because a flight gets cancelled, it's out of your control, but you have to sort it out. If, you know, it's just horrendous. It's absolutely horrendous. And it happened to me. And they ended up closing the shop down on Piccadilly Circus for Travel Bag. And so I ended up doing the master's full time in a year. And that was my first stop. Kind of how I got into environment, because that was master's in environmental management.
And so you took, having done that master's, then was that the immediate step into thinking I can help transform business?
Yeah. I took that, and I'd always lived in a fairly entrepreneurial way. and I did cut out a few different companies, tea companies that I set up, and a variety of other things through my life. And I think it was only natural that, even though I was looking for work, and at that time in 2003, no one was really looking for environmental managers, and the people that were looking for ones with experience. And so therefore I had, you know, I was a member of CIWEM, Chartered Institute for Water and Environmental Management, member of IEMA. I had no experience, but had a master's, and it was always, sorry, you've got no experience. I was a bit like, how do I get the experience without getting the job? And I ended up working for a company, Abbott Mead Vickers. And I didn't know who they were, to be honest with you, but they, you know, they did the Guinness adverts. They did Economist adverts. They, a big, big, big ad agency. And they took me on, they tendered for the work, and I won the work. And that was how I ended up just kind of working for myself and being where I am today, I guess.
And grew from there. So you've helped a lot of businesses, as I said in the intro. And one of the things I found very interesting is environmental management and ISO 14001 and other management systems that you might implement can be seen as quite an overhead to a business. Is that because they might be using it wrong?
Absolutely. And this is not going to do. And actually, this is changing as well. So I'm actually can be a bit more candid than I used to be. But there were a lot of consultants that had ISO experience. So ISO 9001 and other ISO standards have been around for longer than 14001 to a degree. And so you got a lot of people that knew management systems, and they decided, well, this environmental stuff is starting to pick up, I will start doing environmental management systems. And they had no passion and they had no drive to help these companies be green. They just had a drive to make sure the right documents were in place. And I guess I was one of the first tranche of new upstarts that were coming through, just going, I don't actually give a monkey's about what documents you've got in place, to be honest with you. If you're reducing your impact, that's what I care about. And then, you know, I met Darren Chadwick, who's also been around, and, you know, and Sam from EcoVet. And there's a few of us that were coming through, and our passion was sustainability and the environment. And if I'm honest, we didn't really care too much about the management system side.
No.
As long as they were continually reducing, which actually is in the spirit of ISO 14001, which is a part of the standard. So you end up, those people, i.e. people like me, end up knowing the standards so well that the auditors that come in that do all these standards, we knew the standard better than they did anyway. So it was we were a nightmare for them.
Because
we were pushing the environmental stuff. We were arguing that you didn't need to have a particular wording in a document. And we were on the whole right, because all we did was 14001. We didn't do any other standards.
Right. So was that therefore 14001 the more of the is the management standard, whereas actually you were trying to apply environmental impact instead of environmental management? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's all tied together. The 14001 kind of the certification and the process is phenomenal. And anyone looking at wanting their organization to be environmental, and you can't afford a consultant, pay 65 quid, get that standard, and just follow it.
Yeah.
And you will end up with a company that's definitely environmental, and you will reduce your impact without a shadow of a doubt.
And you gave an example where somewhere I saw that you'd help Grant Thornton save 250,000 in their first year. How can you turn that environmental impact, which so many people think they need to invest in, it's going to be this capital outlay, how do you turn that into a savings? Where do they find their savings?
So the bigger the companies, the easier it is, because they are potentially traveling too much. They are definitely using too much energy. So we optimize their building management systems. We look at the buildings they're in. We look at what they're printing, change their print printers, to the Follow Me printers. You know, there's so many, there were so many things, but thankfully a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about tends to be what people do already. And I think, and what will be really interested in coming out of COVID is this, the procurement side of organizations, and
what
will they procure coming out? Because suddenly these companies who have 500-600 plus people, they probably about 5% of their overheads is procurement, and it'll probably has dropped about one, because they're not procuring as much, because they don't actually need it. And so it will be interesting to see what budgets people have got put going forwards.
Yeah, over and above where they've had to cut because of the impact of the thing itself. Yeah, that will be interesting. Have you seen a change in the companies that are coming to you and approaching to you? So that are the, was it previously we need to get this standard so that we can win a contract, and now it's switched to more of I need to do this because I need to reduce my impact? Or
yeah, I would say that. Although we've always been at the, we've always been in a place where most of our organizations come to us because they actually really want to be more sustainable. Because we're, you don't come to Green Element if you want to just do it for a tender, because A, we'll probably go into too much detail. Therefore, we're probably going to be too expensive. And B, they'll probably switch off because they've got a bunch of environmental consultants that are highly academic and very bright trying to reduce their impact, and no one wants a load of them in your company if you don't really care what you're doing.
No, that's true enough. Okay, so moving on, I see over your shoulder for those that get to watch this on YouTube, and we are doing this on both a podcast and YouTube for a change for this series. I see a little plaque which suggests that you were in the first cohort of B Corps in the UK. Why did you pursue that certification?
If I'm honest, it's because a client said, and it was a large client, they turned around, it was Grant Thornton, and they turned around to us and said, we're looking at B Corp. If you run our sustainability and our environmental stuff, you should probably look at something like that. And we went, all right. We weren't that large then. We were only, I think we were only 3 or 4 people. And so it was me that went, all right, I'll do it. And without really looking at it, I started working my way through it. I'd learned enough from them that it was all about, it incorporated all the values that we had in the organization. And I found it fairly easy to go through. And one of the reasons why they were quite keen for us to go through it was because they knew the company, and they knew our ethos, and they knew what it was we were trying to achieve anyway. And it did. It felt like a glove. It just fitted really, really well. And it was absolutely the perfect thing we could have done at the time. And I think if I'd have thought about it too much, and this is going to be slightly ironic, I would have been going, oh no, a certification. I don't want to be going down that route. Because I do worry slightly about certification. But having gone down it, one of the things that I really liked about it was it incorporated, as I said, all the values that a company could and should have. So it's not just the environment. And at that time, we didn't have ISO 14001 ourselves, but it incorporated all of that environmental stuff as well.
So, I mean, you found the certification easy because it aligned very well to your existing business, and is a benefit of being slightly smaller and perhaps not having to engage such a long, large workforce.
Yeah.
But you must be on your, what, second recertification now?
Third.
Mm. So is it getting any easier then, time on time?
Ooh. It's really hard to answer that, because look at what we do for a living. We help organizations with certification. Yeah. And I think that's possibly another reason why I found it really easy. Was I didn't look at the questions and go, oh, I don't know what to answer. I looked at it and went, oh, well, we do EcoVadis, we do CDP. You know, I had been doing all these questionnaires for companies for so many years that it was just, for me, another questionnaire with a bunch of questions. So therefore, it was very natural to do it. And we've just submitted our last one now. And now I'd say what's quite nice is I went through it with Sarah, who's just done the B Corp leader training. I'm quite happy to do it with members of the team. We're a very open team with going through absolutely everything anyway.
And has that team been drawn to you because of your B Corp? Because I've heard from others that has been a benefit in capturing good talent.
I think so. I do think so.
Difficult to pin down unless somebody who actually walks in the door and say, I looked you up because you're a B Corp. So can you put a finger on why you value being a B Corp then? Why do you strive to redo this? It's easy certification, essentially, in your area. Why do you value it?
It's a community. It's got values. What has helped is as we've grown, we're now up to 14 people, and we're just literally putting on another job advert today for another person. You alluded to this previously, where you said smaller companies do find it easier, and they do. And because of their structure maybe, and it's not so complicated. And I think one of the things that I knew was I knew we were going to be growing, so I wanted to put that structure in at the beginning. And every time we go through the assessment, I pull out a bunch of no's and go to the team, right, these are the no's that we've pulled out. Next time we do it, we need to say yes to these. How do we say yes to it? And we're now profit sharing. So we're doing share of profit in the organization. That was one of the no's last time. And I can't remember what the no's were this time, but we've pulled them out and we will make sure that we're doing it. And we got a really good score this time. I can't say the score because it may well be knocked down because we haven't actually had it reviewed yet. But I want to continually improve. And it's a really good process to make sure that you're adhering to your own standards. We had a really difficult year in 2018, and I was overstaffed, and we didn't have enough clients. And if I was a normal company, I would have let someone go, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
And I probably wouldn't have. And that would have been a horrible place to be.
Yeah.
But our values are that we look after each other and we make sure we do. The other thing I would have stopped doing is we work for a charity of our choice one day a month, every single full-time employee. And that cost the business, at that point, it was costing us, what, £60,000-£65,000 of lost billable hours.
Yes.
And for a small company, that's a huge amount of money. And it's a lot more now. But again, I could have dropped that. But because of the B Corp certification and the value system that it had made us adhere to, I couldn't do it. And that was what was really pleasing, was I had put myself into a corner by doing B Corp.
Yeah.
And you have to adhere to your values then. And actually, we came out okay. And it was fine. It was stressful. And I had nights that I literally was crying myself to sleep. But it was fine in the end. And I think that, and that just shows what B Corp certification can do for an organization, how strong it can be.
And that presumably the team pulled together to work as hard as possible to pull in those extra clients and to do the extra effort that was needed to make it happen.
To be honest with you, I didn't tell them everything at the time, because I think it's hard when you're running.
That puts a pressure on, doesn't it, otherwise? Yeah.
Because otherwise they may all, to be honest with you, if I'd have told them the truth, they probably, half of them would have jumped ship. I would have done.
I love that concept that you actually, almost changed your morality or perhaps even a normal business decision. I worked in very big businesses, which quite happily shed 200-300 people at the drop of a hat and a 30-day consultation out the door. And it is pretty hideous, especially if you're the manager who's got to walk people in. So, to actually fight back and go, no, that's not the spirit of being a B Corp, I think that's brilliant. Okay, so I asked you before we came on is if you had an action that you'd share with people, you would encourage people to take on themselves. What would you point people to do?
I would say to report on your carbon footprint. I'm obviously going to say that, to be honest with you, but considering what I do. But I honestly think it's the best thing that you can do, and set science-based targets on the back of your carbon footprint. We've got a sister company, compareyourfootprint.com, that if you're under 300,000 pound turnover, you can do it for free as well, you know. And it is really important to complete a full carbon footprint, because then you'll know where you should be in the future and how you're going to get. And those science-based targets will allow you to understand how you can grow the business in line with the 1.5 degree increase and real net zero by 2050. And that's really, really important. And there are lots of businesses with their current business models that are going to be unable and are unable to do that.
Yeah.
Therefore, how do they do it? You know, they're going to have to change their model. They're going to have to look at the way that they do business. And that's really important. We can't just pretend that it's not happening and just go, oh, it's business as usual. And we're a bit green because we've changed our photocopiers to double-sided. Yeah, we've done it all now.
What are you still printing? I mean, that brings me on to a point at the bottom of your website. You've declared a business, declared a climate emergency, I saw as well. So there are still a lot of naysayers out there about the climate emergency, that this isn't happening. This is a normal thing. Is that something you don't believe, or are you just saying that climate, we are seriously negatively affecting the climate?
I don't really understand the question, to be honest with you, but
sorry, my apologies. A climate emergency, there's a lot of people that don't
think there's a climate emergency.
Yeah, just don't believe it. What would you say to them? Perhaps that's a better question.
Well, it's I don't know. The science speaks for itself, to be honest with you. If you've got over 99% of scientists saying there is, then quite frankly, you're a fool. If you're not going to read the science and understand science, then what's the point? You might as well think the Earth's flat as well, because quite frankly, it could be.
There's a stack of them as well, isn't there?
Yeah. Every time I go forwards, it seems to be flat, so therefore it must be flat.
It's green. I get you. Also asked you for a recommendation of something that people could read or look at, or...
Well, we've partnered with the Water Bear Network, and the Water Bear Network are a brilliant organization. They're on an app, and their whole ethos is they promote films from around the world from NGOs. And so, have you heard of My Octopus Teacher?
No.
So My Octopus Teacher was a big thing on Netflix about 6 months ago, and that came from Water Bear Network, and they've brought out a number of very good nature documentaries, but it's all aligned to the Sustainable Development Goals. And they are hoping that and expecting people to watch the films and then donate money to the NGOs that have made the films. And it's kind of bringing reality into climate change and what's going on within the environment. And I just fell in love with the concept and fell in love with the people behind the project.
Brilliant. Okay. Water Bear Project.
Water Bear Network.
Water Bear Network. Thank you. We'll put links to that and to
Compare Your Footprint.
Compare Your Footprint. We'll do that as well, because that's another recommendation that we can poke people's ways. And is that they compare, going back on that just quickly, the Compare Your Footprint, if I got that right, is for businesses only, or can an individual use it as well?
And it's businesses only. It's
B2B. That's fine.
But we do have homeworking capability within there. So any organization that has homeworking can work through the system as well.
Well, it's been quite an interesting transition for companies. And we ourselves shut our office because of home working, and a year in, it's actually to a certain extent better for us. So, yeah, I can understand why that needs to be included, because it has impacted my environment.
But from that degree, it's kind of, you possibly could do your personal, and you'd have to kind of manipulate
as a business.
We're set up for businesses, but
Okay, that's great. We'll put links to those on our show page, definitely. So just to wind us up then, I challenge you to a match of fact and fake. I think you've got one.
I've got three now.
You've got three. Wow, that's pretty impressive. So let's go for it. I'll test me out and see how you go.
Okay. Are you going to go first, or am I?
No, you go for it.
Oh, that's just cheating. You've probably got a list of 10. You're like, right, if his are really hard, I'm going to pick my harder ones.
Damn, he's on to me. No, honestly, I've only got three.
Okay, so is carbon offsetting good for the environment?
Oh, that is just such a horrible question. Because I think I know what you're going to say. I'm going to say that it is good for the environment. Yes, fact.
I would agree to a degree.
So
and I think this is why I wanted to bring it up, because
it's a good one.
You know, it is a conversation that we need to be having. Every carbon offsetting company I know does a good thing. I have actually yet to come across a carbon offsetting company that are run by narcissistic, horrible, evil people in towers wanting to run the world and earn as much money as possible. They're all good people, but it's how we work with the you know, what it is that we're doing. So travel wise, what carbon we're emitting, and how do we alleviate that problem? And buying stoves in Africa is an amazing, amazing thing, but it doesn't remove that carbon. By buying a tree in Kenya does not remove that carbon by 2030. We need to be aware of what's going on, and that's why it's not good for the environment, but it is.
It's good for the spirit. And to be honest, we need to plan beyond 2030. Because we know, as you're probably alluding to, that you plant a tree today, it's 20 years before it becomes really useful in sequestering carbon. And you're talking about a ton in its lifetime. And so we've got to plant billions of trees and trying to, you know, compensate for what's happening in the Brazil at the moment, which is just bonkers. It is essential that we do that, but it's not doing anything for today.
And absolutely.
We need these new technologies. Well, yeah, that's a good one. Do you want one from me then, do you?
Go on. Well, it's a bit unfair otherwise, isn't it?
So early in 2020, Australia suffered their most destructive bushfires on record. And the fact is, over a period of several months, more than 11 million hectares, that's 110,000 square kilometres, of bush, forest and parks across Australia were burned.
Yes,
and that's the fact?
Yes, fact.
It is fact. It is. And that, for Pete, I struggle with Australia. You've probably been there by the sounds of your experiences in the past. That area is about half the size of the UK, to put it in context. Although it looks like a blip down the side of Australia, it is a massive area of loss. Okay, so we're kind of one all.
Cool.
Go on then.
Is carbon pricing realistic?
Oh, as in with regards carbon credits, you mean? Or
carbon pricing, so the price of a ton of carbon.
Oh, I see. Wow. I must admit, that's not something I know something about. I fear that it probably isn't. So yeah. I would say that, it, yeah, that's...
You're correct.
What is the carbon pricing as far as per ton? Do you know?
I don't actually know what it is at the moment. I know it's totally undervalued. I do know that Boston Consulting Group are undervaluing it at £80 a ton by 2030. I think Mark Carney is valuing it at £100 a ton by 2030. At the moment, it's about five. I think it's.
But some of the sequestering technologies that are coming out. So we reported on one in our last show, a couple of shows ago, that was taking it out and turning it into limestone, and therefore it could be brought back into the earth. Great. But it meant that the one ton of carbon cost a lot more than £100.
Exactly. Bury. Exactly.
And
there lies the problem. That's exactly.
Pricing it on trees, we've got a problem.
Yeah.
And the market's wrong. Okay. Well, that's a good point, to say the least. Okay.
What's your next one?
My next one is in the EU. Environmental tax revenue amounted to 124.6 billion in 2018 euros. That is that a fact or a fake?
Fact. And I'm putting my hands up in the air, going, no, "I honestly actually don't know. I'm not, you know."
That's fair enough. And I think that was a fake figure. And actually, the figure instead of 124 is 324 million. Euros in tax, but it hasn't gone up much in regards to GDP. You know, it's like 0.06. So environmental taxes are not hurting anybody any more than they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago. I don't know if I agree with environmental taxes or where I don't. It's one of those things. Do I like an idea of a tax that punishes those that are doing bad things? Would I prefer to reward people that are doing good? But I suppose there's a bit of a balance there.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to do a final one?
Okay.
Or can we call it quits?
I quite want to do it because I think the reason why I've got my three is because I want more conversations around it. Already probably know what I'm going to be asking. Is carbon offsetting a risk?
Oh, is it a risk? What, that we rely on it too much?
Is it a risk for a company to go down that route, or, you know?
I do think there's an element. Yeah, well, there's a risk in everything you do, of course, in the good old risk management world. It's nothing without risk. I think there is a risk in going down the carbon offsetting or a particular solution or putting all your eggs in one basket, as Microsoft tried to do recently. They said, we're going to be net zero across our whole lifetime by 2030, and then they came back and went, don't know how we can do that now, so sorry about it. So I think there is a risk in relying on carbon offsetting. Yes.
Yeah, I'd say that was a fact as well. I think people, whatever you think of the price of carbon, if you're offsetting all your emissions and then purporting to be carbon neutral, and you'll notice Mark Carney's company is in the news at the moment about exactly this. If it's costing you £100,000 to offset all your carbon, and then we know that COP26, they're looking at tripling the price of carbon at the least, then next year it's going to be £300,000. Can your company afford to be carbon neutral? Even I don't agree with the word carbon neutral, but it doesn't really matter what I agree with. It's still a risk, whatever way you slice that orange.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point, that you've got to look ahead at where the carbon market's going to go. And it is a market. And like any market, there's a heavy risk that either the government will enforce some regulation which will drive it up, or suddenly they'll realise that it's an unrealistic price, as you said before, and you'll be footed with a bill. And you're right on carbon neutrality. It's a difficult subject. I've spoken to a lot of people during this series who have gone for net zero, carbon neutral, carbon positive, climate positive. And I find it incredibly complicated as to which is which. And then people say, oh, it's pretty well all the same thing. And then other people go, well, no, it isn't. One's for the lifetime of the company and the other one's for year on year. And And I think there's a problem. We've got a problem with our terminology. Everyone just comes up with a new one because they don't like the sound of having negative in their title.
Yeah.
We're carbon negative. Oh, that sounds a bit negative. Well, it is negative. Oh, God, why do we end on such a complicated thing? But on the basis of those facts were brilliantly challenging for me because they touch on subjects I'm not clear on and perhaps many of us are unaware of, to be honest.
And I think that's it. And I'm sorry I put you on the spot with those.
No.
But it was more for us to talk about it.
Yeah.
As you've just said, the language is confusing. It's nuanced as well to such a degree that, quite frankly, assumptions are made and people are just almost making it up as they go along. And that's not the way that we can, you know, Mother Nature can't be tricked. We can trick fiscal economies. I mean, going back to just GDP and, you know, the rise in GDP, and everyone's always like, oh, yeah, no, GDP needs to be risen. Bobby Kennedy back in what, the 70s, said, I don't understand why GDP is so important. If we get more people robbing banks and we have more people smuggling stuff, our GDP will rise because it's all interlinked.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's completely false. I mean, that GDP is so flawed that why are we still working on this when, you know, the Americans were talking about how flawed it was in the 70s?
You're throwing my life into complete conflict, into complete disarray. I'm having to throw all these preconceptions at GDP. I'll have to go have a look at that again now.
No, no, economics pulls up.
Economics is a problem, isn't it? Capitalism is a problem. And I think, you know, we heard from Al Gore, didn't we, recently, where he said the B Corps are going to reshape capitalism. An interesting concept because capitalism is kind of broken. You know, the boom and bust capitalism that we suffer at the moment is just wrong. And coming out of this pandemic, what are we going to emerge into out of our current lockdown state?
It's the argument that Elon Musk had about, do you remember, it was a couple of years ago, potentially now, or a year and a half ago, that Elon Musk was having an argument with the regulatory bodies, financial bodies in America, about reporting, and he was like, I don't like it. And that's why he bought back the company. His company, because he didn't want it to be floated, because he was like, how can I realistically solve the problems I'm trying to solve in 4 months? Every quarter I've got to be reporting. So yeah. And I think he was alluding to the problems that we have in capitalism through that.
Himself. Yeah. And it's all about the money. I mean, the whole thing about capitalism and one thing that the B Corps brings to it is that how do you strike a balance between your people, planet, and having a profit? You can still make a realistic profit by considering the whole story instead of just this one thing. It's all about the bottom line and shareholders and returns and share price. I get his point of view, and recently kind of sniffing around Bill Gates' new book and his opinion. It's important these people are showing their opinions, whether you agree with them or not, it's a different matter.
God, we could go on talking for ages, and I know you're on the time. You want this to finish as well, probably.
Well, no, I'm quite happy to chat, but I think for the purposes of our listeners, and we're looking for a nice show for them to eat every day. I'm gonna call it time and say thank you very much, Will, and appreciate your time.
No, Russell, thank you so much for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
We really hope that you found this special B Corp Month episode both informative and entertaining. Make sure you don't miss any of the 31 interviews with B Corporations who are striving to be a force for good. So make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss a thing. And don't forget to spread the word with others. If you have any questions about being or becoming a B Corp or any comments and suggestions about the show, please do get in touch. You can email studio@greenelephant.show or visit the website greenelephant.show or find us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube or Twitter by searching for Green Elipod or The Green Elephant Show. You can also review the show on Google and Apple Podcasts. Join us tomorrow and we hope you have a sustainable day.